welcome to KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Monday, April 10th of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, we'll hear from Iranian Nobel laureate Dr. Shireen Ebadi, who was in Boulder Friday to discuss the human rights situation in her home country. And CityCast Denver visits the historic El Chapultepec music venue to see how its new operator is trying to redefine nightlife in the Lodo neighborhood. After the BBC News headlines, we'll hear the latest commentary from Jim Hightower. Then Rosanna Longo-Better will bring you this month's edition of Storytellers of Color. Her guest today is Monica King, a community somatic psychotherapist who specializes in trauma and resilience. At 9 a.m., we'll bring you Counterspin, a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting. Then Ann Cantillo will be in the Boulder studio at 9:30 for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still coming up, but first, the headlines with KGNU's Benita Lee.
A judge in Texas issued a ruling Friday afternoon to reverse the Federal Drug Administration's approval of mifepristone, a medication used for pill-based abortions. The ruling could affect access to safe, legal abortions in states across the country. KGNU's Jack Armstrong has more.
Colorado State Attorney General Phil Weiser released a statement admonishing the decision, stating it is outrageous that one judge in Texas would suspend the FDA's approval of mifepristone, which has been used safely and effectively for more than 20 years for abortion care and to treat miscarriages. Weiser's statement also included reassurance that Coloradans would have ample access to abortion medication despite the recent court ruling. Weiser made clear that Colorado is as involved as it can be in barring actions the FDA may take to diminish the availability of the drug. Weiser ended the statement indicating that, quote, "Attacks on reproductive freedom will continue, and we will be vigilant in the fight for the right to access mifepristone and safe and legal abortion care in Colorado." For KGNU, I'm Jack Armstrong.
A Native American tribe in Arizona agreed to not use about a fifth of its Colorado River water rights until 2025 in a deal with the U.S. government made last week. In exchange, the Gila River Indian community will receive $150 million plus over $80 million in funding for a water recycling pipeline. Officials are calling the agreement compensated conservation. The partnership is part of a plan to lessen water use in seven drought-stricken states. Those states include Colorado, Arizona, Wyoming, California, Nevada, Utah, and New Mexico. The funding comes from the Biden administration's bipartisan infrastructure law. A total of eight projects in the Upper Colorado Basin region will support water reclamation systems and replace aging infrastructure. Two historically black colleges and universities have signed an agreement with Colorado community colleges to make it easier for students to transfer to their institutions. KGNU's Juanita Hurtado has more.
The Colorado Community College System is extending its Bridge to Bachelor's Degree program outside of Colorado. The Bridge to Bachelor's Degree program launched in 2020. It guarantees community college students admission to four-year universities with full credit transfers for qualifying students. Many of the state's largest universities already participate in the program, which can allow students to save thousands of dollars in tuition. Houston-based Texas Southern University and St. Augustine's University in Raleigh, North Carolina, became the first out-of-state universities to participate in the program. While the Bridge to Bachelor's Degree program does partner with in-state universities, there are federally designated minority-serving institutions. The state of Colorado does not have a single historically black college or university. For KGNU, I'm Juanita Hurtado.
The city of Aurora is adding new emergency dispatch mental health clinicians to its two behavioral health crisis response teams. Clinicians are either dispatched without police to answer non-emergency calls, or in emergencies involving violent or life-threatening situations, clinicians are paired with crisis-trained police officers. The response teams were created to de-escalate crises stemming from issues like mental health, homelessness, and substance abuse. The teams responded to some 1,500 calls in 2022. The city of Boulder is encouraging residents to plan for increased bear activity. As bears come out of winter hibernation seeking food, the city encourages community members to use bear-resistant containers for outside trash and compost. Bear-resistant containers are mandatory west of Broadway and south of Sumac Avenue. They also say residents should keep livestock, especially goats, secured overnight. City officials say preventing bears from seeking human food protects them from hazards such as power poles, harmful chemicals, and losing their natural fear of people. Another sunny day along the Front Range. In Boulder, a high near 76 and a low around 49. In Denver, a high around 78 with a low around 46. In Fort Collins, a high of 76 and a low of 73. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Iranian Nobel laureate, former judge, and longtime human rights attorney Dr. Shireen Ebadi was in Boulder Friday to talk about the situation in Iran and to screen a documentary. The film, Until We Are Free, is based on Dr. Ebadi's life story. She was Iran's first female judge, but was demoted to the position of a courtroom clerk after religious clerics who took control of the country decided that women couldn't be judges. She then went on to start a legal practice to defend women and children and ended up as a political prisoner for her efforts. Threats to her person and to her family forced her into exile in London. I sat down with Dr. Ebadi Friday afternoon ahead of her documentary screening at CU Boulder. She spoke through her interpreter, Shireen Eshardi. You've said before that Iranians inside of Iran have told you that you now can be more effective at prompting change and raising awareness outside of Iran than inside. You're all the way here in Colorado. What have you come here to say?
Today, I'm in Colorado, and I want to talk about the situation of human rights in Iran. And I want to tell everyone how the defenders of human rights face challenges in Iran, and many of them face censorship, and at the same time, many are apprehended or in prison and are in prisons. Also today, I want to talk about the demonstrations in Iran, where women chanted that they were against compulsory hijab in Iran. And as a result of those demonstrations, many, many people have been apprehended. For what I know, 20,000 people have been put in prison. Also, over 520 people were killed on the streets, and 52 people have lost their sight as a result of police shooting bullets that are known as plastic bullets. And again, 17 attorneys have been criminally prosecuted, and they're only prosecuted because they have defended the people who were caught. They're free on bail now. Some of them are still in prison. In other words, what the government is saying is that not only people who oppose this government will be apprehended, but even attorneys who defend those people will be put in prison as well.
And it's not just attorneys. When you were defending people who were victims of human rights violations, your family was also targeted. How do you keep going in the face of threats to people who are closest to you?
First of all, when you believe in a goal, then you fight for that goal. But secondly, as defenders of human rights, we have to fight this government. This is what we have chosen to do. This is what we have elected in our lives to do. So we have to continue our fight against the government.
Why specifically come to Colorado or the University of Colorado? What's the connection here?
So, of course, this is not the first time that I've come here. I've been in Colorado before, and when you watch the documentary, you'll see that I've been here before, and I have spoken to people of Colorado before. And now, since they're showing the documentary, I'm here, and of course, I will be responding to questions and that people have here. And I want to say that it's beautiful here, and the people are very kind.
The documentary ends during the pandemic, but it hasn't gotten yet to the part about the protests that erupted just a few months ago after the death of Mahsa Amini. Where do you see the thread of continuity going from the end of the documentary to the present day?
The violations of human rights are not only continuing in Iran, but the government is getting more brutal every day. And of course, the killing of Mahsa Amini, a young woman, on the streets by the police in Iran was like striking a match. It just took over. So the train of revolution has left the station now, and it's going forward. Sometimes it goes slower, sometimes it goes faster, but it's not going to stop, and its people are going to continue until the last station of the train, which is the toppling of the regime in Iran.
On that note, there have been waves of protest in years past, and every time it seems like progress is about to be made, a crackdown occurs and it sets progress back years. What gives you the hope to be able to be convinced that the train has indeed left the station and will arrive?
So the unclaimed rights of the people are gathering on top of each other. And it's not like all of those have come to an end, but they have the type of the struggle has changed now. So now people are not on the streets chanting maybe as much as they were, but at night they get on the roofs and they continue. They continue their fight. And if you look at the situation, every day more people are apprehended. So it's the society in Iran is like a volcano, you can say. The smoke is coming out, but we never know when it will erupt. It will.
And in your time, as you travel around the world and you give speeches and you raise awareness about the situation in Iran, what do you hope that the people listening will come away with?
So most people are surprised when I speak because they know by and large that the government of Iran is not very popular in Iran, but they don't know what the reality is, and they're not aware of the statistics that I give them. For example, 1/3 of the people of Iran at this time are under the poverty line, live under the poverty line. However, and the government accepts that too. However, people are not aware of that. People don't know that that's the situation. Whereas Iran is a very wealthy country, and that shouldn't be the case.
What role do sanctions play? For example, if somebody who is watching from the outside and not sure, at what point does it harm popular resistance inside of Iran, and at what point does it provide more pressure on the government? What are your thoughts on sanctions?
The government of Iran, of course, blames everything on sanctions. So whatever happens in Iran, they say, oh, we're sanctioned, that's why. However, that's not the true story. The issue is that there are three elements that are very important. First, the corruption in the government is extremely high. Secondly, it's all the programs that the government has to support people that they like the Hezbollah in Lebanon, or also they help Bashar Assad a lot. So the money is spent on them. And then thirdly, it could be sanctions. So it's the three of the elements, not just one element, which could be the sanctions. During the Obama administration, when they agreed with Iran, many sanctions were removed, of course, and billions of dollars were sent to the Iranian government. But the situation of people did not change.
Obama, بعد از اینکه دورانش تموم شد,
You know, after President Obama left office, in an interview he said that maybe he made a mistake not defending the people of Iran in the 2009 movement that was against the government. So hopefully now Mr. Biden, who used to be his vice and his friend and ally, maybe hopefully he will defend the people of Iran or support the people of Iran.
بایدن هم بعد از اینکه از ریاست جمهوری افتاد مثل اوباما نگه من اشتباه کردم.
So hopefully Mr. Biden does not regret like Obama did.
Iranian Nobel laureate Dr. Shireen Ebadi. Thanks to Shireen Ershadi for providing interpretation services. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Up next is CityCast Denver. Denver's Lodo neighborhood has long been a magnet for nighttime revelry, with its concentration of restaurants, breweries, shops, and nightclubs. But the area has also become known as a hotspot for trouble and occasional crime, especially late at night when the bars let out, spilling thousands of patrons into the streets with nowhere to go. Is it possible to foster a safer nightlife scene while keeping downtown's party vibe? CityCast Denver host Bree Davies sits down with Stefan Brackett, co-founder of Flowbots and Youth on Record, to talk about his new foundation, what's next for the old El Chapultepec spot, and how Denver can re-envision its nighttime scene.
El Chapultepec did legitimately die during quarantine.
Yeah.
The family that had been running it decided that like they were tired of dealing with all the things that go with it, and then I wanted to let it go at that point in time. And so I, with a bunch of other people in the city, with thousands of people, probably tens of thousands of people in the world, mourned the loss of something that I think kind of identified what Denver is at its best. Mm-hmm. And the reason that we're here now is that through a bunch of amazing twists and turns, the nonprofit that I'm working with has the lease to what the PEC was for the next year. And we have a lot of things that we want to do with it. But one of the things we want to be able to do is make the argument for places like the PEC and like kind of in some ways tell the story of what we are losing and losing places like the PEC and how we can't afford, almost from a music ecosystem perspective, as a culture ecosystem perspective, to lose any more places like this.
So sort of preventative measures.
Preventative measures, and then also saying, like, how do we build other ones?
Okay. But tell me again. So tell me about your nonprofit you mentioned that's got a lease on this space for the next year. Mm-hmm. What is it called? What are you all doing with it?
Okay. Well, since you've known me forever, I am a Denver kid who feels as though this city's really invested in me. Mm. Over the 44 years that I've been here, and it's my duty and responsibility to pay that forward. So my band Flowbots created the organization that's now Youth on Record. And now I'm at this phase where I'm like, okay, well, what next?
Yeah. So for folks that don't know, Youth on Record brings artists, teaching artists into schools to teach kids music, but also the history of music and activism and how to write, and brings them into the studio at Youth on Record and teaches them how to use a soundboard and, mm-hmm. I mean, so many other things, but that came from you and some of your bandmates at Flowbots.
Yes.
With Flowbots. And so now you're in another phase of, you're starting another nonprofit.
I don't know what I'm doing, but it's just, it's made me a student of the pipeline. And so I'm like, okay, well, where are we releasing these kids to? Mm. What is the playground that's in the city? What are the opportunities here? Having been here long enough, I just see that this is kind of becoming a sundown town for teenagers.
Would you explain that a little bit for someone who doesn't know
absolutely.
The
so
term?
Like, so sundown towns were something that you'd find a lot of times, especially in the Jim Crow South, but you'd find them in other cities throughout America, where it was fine for Black people to be around, but after sundown, there were no protections for you. It was fair game. It was borderline the purge for Black people in the streets after sundown. So like no kind of protections, nothing there for you. And so what I'm saying in the same way is that for young people to be in downtown Denver, it's a place where they're not welcome.
Yeah.
You'll just find like, and I'm struggling when I walk through the city to find places that have actually been built for young people to explore and like figure out what they like to do and enjoy. And that, relax. What do they do with all that pent-up energy? They've been in school all day. Like, oh, yeah. Wait, they're supposed to do homework and then just go to bed? Or, like, maybe they've just gotten off of a job? Because when we were kids,
right.
I remember when they brought in the curfew on the parks.
Yeah, and I got a loitering ticket.
Oh, all of us for playing on the swing sets. Like, yeah. like all of these things. But then we had Denny's, and we had Paris on the Platte, and we had The Spot, and we had all of these different places, specifically in downtown Denver. There were several, like, drop-in centers for kids just to go and hang out and just be.
And also sort of unofficial youth-centered businesses. Like, yes. You said, Paris on the Platte. Mm-hmm. Cafe Euphrates was a restaurant that let kids book punk shows.
Yes.
And Mercury Cafe, obviously still around, but your new nonprofit is called the 87 Foundation.
Yes.
What do you want to, is that what you want to create? What do you want to do?
It depends on, do you want the real answer? Do you want, like, the rosy nonprofit answer?
No, I want your answer, Stefan.
I want to make this city a place that makes sense, a place that actually welcomes us. I want a city that isn't just marketing to 25 to 35 year old white kids, mm-hmm. and that's it. That's not who lives here. That's not the sum total of it. And I am seeing a city that continues to lose ground. So when I'm talking about how do we make opportunities available for young people, this it's because young people are the canary in the coal mine of any kind of city. If we're not building anything for them, then that means we're not building anything that retains talent. That means that we're not taking serious the impacts of recreation on mental health and resilience, and especially for young people coming out of COVID. Like, if we have no place for them to play, then we don't have a place for them to live. Mm-hmm. And in this big picture kind of way, I really, really want to be able to make a plan for the nighttime experience of this city, because I've lived here my entire life and there never has been one.
You know, someone would say, well, Stefan, there's plenty of money pouring into this city. There's plenty of places. There's venues. There's bars. What do you want to do?
So while there are plenty of places, all of these places that are coming up are pretty much on the same business model. They're catering to a very narrow demographic. And if there aren't venues or bars or restaurants that are catering to that demographic, then everything else is being used for high-density housing at a very high price. With that kind of being the priority of the city for the last 15 years, that means that all of these other in-between transitional spaces cannot exist. Now, when we start looking at the data behind city planning and all of these things, any other country that you go to, when you go to, like, some city center, some event place, it will be multi-use. It'll be a town square in Rwanda. It will be like a little family plex in France. I don't care, but you see this all over the place where it's like, oh, there's a pretzel stand that's open till 11 and an ice cream parlor. And then like places you can get coffee 24 hours and there's a bar and there's a restaurant and all these things. And then it's activated from like 11 in the morning till 2 at night and the city shows up there.
Yeah.
Now, when you just select only for a small group, and it's all of the profit is pretty much predicated on selling alcohol, yeah. which is the one drug that's most linked to violence and all these behaviors. When you narrow the focus, we're just finding in general across the United States of America, this kind of tuning only to that is giving us this result.
So I know El Chapultepec, one of the things they struggled with is like when you step outside the doors of this historic jazz club.
Yes.
It's a Rockies game, yeah. let out, and you have like a bunch of crazy drunk fans interacting with like people that came to see jazz, and they were just tired of like, not saying that those folks aren't welcome, but it's like a different set kind of energy. And I just struggle with like, how do we, you can't just be like, no bros allowed in this place,
no.
you know, because that's not ultimately solving the problem. The problem solving would be like, bros are welcome, but we're all on the same page about how we treat each other.
Yes. And so like, to be perfectly honest, we're actually taking advantage of the fact that this is not a venue right now. When we're going to be doing our events, it's going to be by like membership. And the membership's not exclusive, but the whole purpose of the membership is that you're actually buying into a set of values and a responsibility when you come into this space. And so like, let's say I send you a membership thing. And that means you get to invite two other people, right? But you are also responsible for those two people. And if they end up acting the fool, I will talk to you about those two people and we will have a conversation about, can they come back to the space? We have to kind of demonstrate what we're looking for and also understand the water that we're swimming in. We're not going to have an event here the same night as a Rockies game.
Sure.
Yes, we'd love to see certain things like change, but we're also not going to be unrealistic about what that means.
Stephen Brackett, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You just heard an excerpt from CityCast Denver, the local Denver daily news podcast. Learn more about subscribing to the podcast at denver.citycast.fm or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's all for today's Morning Magazine. Special thanks to Benita Lee, Juanita Hurtado, Jack Armstrong, Alexis Kenyon, and to the CityCast Denver crew. I've been your host and producer, Shannon Young. If you'd like to comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave us a voicemail at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for a commentary from Jim Hightower, and then the April edition of Storytellers of Color. That's just after the news headlines from the BBC.